Welcome to a Bow Valley Christian Church podcast. We're about helping people find and follow Jesus. You are listening to Steve McMillan share his message titled, When Love Walked Among Us, The Way of the Towel, from the series titled, These Three Remain. This message was broadcast live July 23rd, 2023.
Good morning, church family. For our teaching time today, I know that we have several of our kids in the service with us today, and so you have an outline or a little booklet you could follow along with. And as my parents used to say when I was invited as a child to sit through service, draw a picture of the preacher if you're bored. And so go ahead and do that, and maybe Pastor Pete will put it on social media and after I approve it. Hey, we're in this teaching series called Faith, Hope, and Love, and we're taking all year to talk about these things. This summer, we're talking about the idea of what it looked like when Jesus walked among us. What do faith, hope, and love look like? And so we believe that for Christians, you can replace the word Jesus with the word love. And so love walked among us. Love was born in Bethlehem, and love went to the cross for us. And today we're going to consider this idea of what it looked like when love walked among us. And this is a message that I'll call the Way of the Towel. And we're going to look in John chapter 13. So if you have a Bible, you could open it up at this time or open it up on your app on your phone. And I'll read it to us from John 13, the first 17 verses. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And Jesus replied, you do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand. No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then Lord Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean and you are clean, though not every one of you, for he knew who was going to betray him. And that is why he said that not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you as an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. One of my favorite scenes in the Gospels. The story of John 13 that we just heard occurs on a Thursday night, about 12 hours before Jesus is crucified. It occurs in what we call the upper room. Several of us were in that exact location just a couple of weeks ago. There's a picture of us in what they think would have been near where the upper room would have actually been. The time of the year was Passover time. Some people estimate that well over a million people would spend that week in Jerusalem. So imagine that. It's very crowded. And word has spread through this over a million people that Jesus is on the way to the Passover feast and that he has just raised Lazarus from the dead. Do you remember that story? So imagine if someone had just raised someone from the dead and then they were coming into town, the whole place would be wanting to just see this person. News spread faster than a wildfire. So it's no wonder that when Jesus comes into Jerusalem, when he's about to come to this event, when he's about to come to the Passover, thousands of people line the road to greet him as he makes his way to Jerusalem. And the Bible tells us that these thousands of people are yelling out phrases for Jesus. They say words like, Hosanna, blessed be the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. Blessed is the kingdom of our father David. Lift up your gates, O you ancient doors, that the King of glory might come in. And who is this King of glory? The Lord Almighty, the King of glory. So all these people, can you hear them? They're chanting. They're adoring Jesus. And what they're saying with their words and actions is very important as we get into this story. Because what they're doing is they're placing these palm branches. We call it Palm Sunday. They're placing these palm branches before Jesus on the road. And what they're doing, what you might not understand, but certainly they would have understood and Jesus would have understood, is that what they're doing is very reminiscent of a welcome that they had given someone a few years before, Simon Maccabeus in 141 BC, before Jesus was born, almost 200 years. Before he came into the city, they were all doing the exact same thing because he was the one who was going to conquer the occupying Syrian forces. So you have to understand this picture. All of these people are crying out to Jesus. They all think that he's going to be the savior. They all think that he's going to be the one that's going to overthrow the Roman Empire. And so they're shouting, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. It's a quote from Psalm 118. And that psalm was written at a time when Israel was surrounded by warring nations and God rescued her. It was sung as a conquering hero who would liberate the people. And so the word Hosanna means save now. And so all of these Jews, and the disciples included, watching themselves, watching the crowds get bigger and bigger, and everywhere Jesus goes, he has this great following that's behind him. They have seen the power of Jesus. They have seen what he's able to do with sick people. They have seen what he's been able to do when he teaches. They've seen what he is able to do for Lazarus, and now they believe that he's about to become the king that all of the prophets have declared is going to come and one day would liberate the people. And so everybody around Jesus thinks that he's going to be the one to take up the leadership and take on the Roman Empire. And so they had been longing for this king for years and years. Imagine a whole culture of people longing for a rescuer, longing for the day when they wouldn't be oppressed anymore, when they wouldn't be taxed like they are taxed anymore. And so they were waiting for a king to come and to smash and to shatter and to purge the Romans, to demonstrate his authority, just like Moses had done with Pharaoh. They want him to show his glory. They want a king that would march to victory. And so they were expecting, as Jesus walked into Jerusalem, all of the people around him, they're expecting now he's going to do it. Now he's going to take up his mantle. Now he's going to claim his kingship. Now he's going to be the leader that we've always wanted. You could put it this way, I'm trying to make a way that we'll remember this message. You could say that the people were anxiously desiring that he would take up his scepter as a king. Do you know what a scepter is? Scepter means if I point it at you, then you're allowed to come into my presence. And if I point it at you and say, speak, then you're allowed to speak. But if I say, don't speak, you cannot speak. It's a powerful thing, eh? You'd like one, wouldn't you, Haddon, to use in your house? Yeah, I kind of would sometimes too. And they all thought that Jesus would do what all of these other political leaders would do. They would take up their scepter, in other words, the mantle that said, I am the king, I am the leader, let's unite the Jews, let's pick up our swords, and let's take on the Romans. And they were ready for it. And they were ready for him to take the scepter because the scepter meant power. The scepter meant authority. In the king's hand, a scepter said, you can come into the throne room. It would determine who could talk and who would be sent away. The scepter was a symbol of authority. It was a symbol of decision-making. It was a symbol of victory. It was a symbol of power. It was a symbol fit for a king. A king that was going to lead these people into victory, the victory that the entire nation of Israel had been waiting for. They'd been longing for, and so they can't wait for Jesus to pick it up and finally do what they've been longing for a leader to do. But then, what do we read? It was just before Passover. Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and go to the Father. And he loved his disciples during his ministry on earth. He now showed them the full extent of his love. It was time for the supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority, that he had come from the Father. He had all authority, that he would return to the Father. So what does he do? He gets up from the table. He takes off his robe, and he wraps a towel around his waist. So the picture here is, it's not really in our culture, we don't usually do this, but part of the preparation for any meal where you would get together means that you would have to have a foot washer. So when you came into someone's house, you would have a prearranged foot washer because you would walk around Israel, and for those of us who were just there a couple weeks ago, you know what this would have been like. If you had walked all day barefoot or with sandals, you would have a lot of grime. There was no paved roads in those days. There was no showers. There was none of that spray that takes away the odor. Your feet would get incredibly dirty. And feet basically would be very, very nasty. And so your feet started to stink. And so in every time that you went into a home in Jerusalem, when you went into a Jew's home, there would be a basin. And that basin would be the place of water. If you were the guest, the lowest person in the of importance in the household, a servant or maybe a slave, would come and they would get on their knees before the guest and they would take the towel and they would wash the guest's feet. But apparently on this night, nobody does it. I don't know if they didn't text the foot washer or what took place, but there was no foot washer. There's nobody there. And no one does it. There's no servant that's willing to do it. And goodness knows that no disciple is going to stoop that low and be that humble. So what happens? Jesus Christ gets up, walks over to the bowl of water. Can you see him? And he takes a towel. He takes off his teaching robe. And the Son of God, creator of the world, gets down on his knees and starts to rub and clean and wash and dry the feet of every single man in the room. And I can imagine that the room got dead quiet and all the arguing about who's greatest stopped and every eye just watched to see what Jesus would do. All you could hear was the sound of Jesus' hands rubbing against callous feet, the sound of the towel drying the feet, the Lord of creation becoming lower than his creatures and serving them in the most humble way possible. So Jesus is the king, all right. He's the king of glory, yes. And here he is washing the feet of the disciples. He does not pick up the scepter. Instead, he picks up the towel. So here's the king whose authority is a towel. This is not what people expected. Jesus has disappointed a lot of people in that moment when he picks this thing up. Because all of the people these pilgrims who have come to Passover and his disciples who are waiting to see what he will do, he does something extremely countercultural. He disappoints a lot of people. He reorients basically the idea of leadership and he demonstrates something extremely countercultural that reorientates how his disciples would go on and live out the message of Jesus. It's not what they expected, but it's what they needed. So this morning, I just want to contrast, and yes, this is the dish towel that some servant has been using in our kitchen the last couple weeks. Today, what I just want to notice is this, what the way of the towel looks like, because this is high theater. When Jesus does something, he's not just doing it for that moment. He's portraying a picture, and he's showing us two ways, I think, the difference between the way of the scepter and the way of the towel. And here's what we see. First of all, notice what takes place here or why John says it happens. He says, when it comes to love, love picks up the towel. It was just before Passover festival. Jesus knew the hour had come for him to leave and go to the Father. And then this line, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the very end. Or another translation says that he showed them the full extent of his love. So how do you show the full extent of a love if you're Jesus Christ? You pick up a towel and you get on your knees. What is he saying? He's saying that love kneels. Love kneels. Love washes feet. Love stoops. Love gets down. Love does whatever is necessary to help the person who's right in front of us. Now, the way of the scepter is different. The way of the scepter says that love, I will love you if you have something to offer me. If I can get something from you, then I will love you if you have something to offer. So if you're attractive to me, I will love you. If you're kind to me, I will love you. If you do what I want you to do, then I will love you. I will keep on loving you as long as you keep on meeting my needs, as long as you keep on making me feel good, as long as you behave in a certain way, then I will love you. I will keep on loving you. There's a kind of love that is reciprocal. And it is only based on the fact of if you give it to me, then I will give it to you. That's the way of the scepter. But there is also a kind of love that is different than that. And this is the love of Jesus Christ. And Jesus comes along and says, this is real love. This is the extent of my love, Jesus says. And he gets down on his knees and he wraps himself in a towel and he starts washing. And this is what's so interesting to me. He does not wait until these people have got things right. In fact, he goes to the betrayer. He goes to Peter. He goes to Judas. He goes to the very people who are going to do the very worst to him. And he says to them, give me those feet. Give me those feet. So let me ask you this. Have you ever let Jesus wash your feet? Can you feel his hands on your feet? Can you see his eyes as he looks up? Do you know that kind of love? What am I saying? I'm saying your feet stink. Let him wash you. Do you see? We all have these smelly parts of our lives, these crusty parts of our heart that we would rather not show Jesus. And he says, give me your feet. You know, that ugly bitterness inside of you, it's like some kind of hard callus or a nasty bunion. Or your regrets and your lusts, they're kind of like rising like warts. And Jesus says, give me your feet. Do you see? Jesus washes the feet of the person with the dying marriage. He washes the feet of the lonely victim. He washes the feet of the addicted and the divorced and the weeping parent and the devastated grandparent and the embittered heart. Jesus is kneeling to clean the soiled, the shamed. Everybody who's sickened when they look inside the mirror, give me your feet, Jesus says. Will you let him love you? Because if you're like me, when it comes to the parts of your heart and the parts of your life that are the darkest and the deepest trapped inside, you don't want anybody looking at them. And Jesus says, I'll wash that. You see, because the way of the scepter says, I'll love you if you love me back and perform the way I want. But the way of the scepter also says, I will love you if I feel like it. If I feel like it, I'll love you. If it feels good to me, I will love you. If you smile when I love you, if you love me back, then I will love you. But the way of the towel is different. Jesus is showing us something very unique here about love, and that is that love kneels. Love is a verb. It's something that you do. It's not something that you fall into like a pool of water or that you fall out of like a high chair. It's not like that. Love is not a noun. It's a verb. Jesus would be a very frustrating marriage counselor. You know, you come into Jesus and you're like your husband and wife and you're like, you know what? I just don't love her anymore. And Jesus says, well, love her. No, I just don't feel like I love her anymore. Well, I don't feel like I love him anymore. And Jesus says, well, love each other. No, no, you didn't hear us, Jesus. We don't feel like loving each other anymore. There's a whole bunch of reasons why we don't feel like we can do it anymore. And Jesus says, love each other. Love each other. It's an action. It's not a feeling word. It's not what we're used to, is it? It's very different. We often wait until we feel like it before we serve other people in love. And it's a mistake. Love is not like that. Tim Keller puts it like this. He says, it's a mistake to think that you must feel love to give it. If your definition of love stresses affectionate feelings more than unselfish actions, you will cripple your ability to maintain and grow strong love relationships. On the other hand, if you stress the action of love over the feeling, you enhance and you establish the feeling. This is one of the secrets of living life as well as marriage. Well, right now, my guess is that you have somebody in your life, maybe more than one, who you'd like to give up on because they've hurt you and they're very hard to love. They've disappointed you. Maybe they mistreated you. You're ready to throw the towel at them. Or as we used to do in the kitchen. Or you're ready to throw the towel in. Just, oh, they're too much. The invitation when love walked among us was to say, this is the way of the towel. Love kneels. Will you serve them? Well, it's not only that. Love kneels, but Jesus also demonstrates this, that power kneels. This is an amazing line that we have here in John 13. It says that Jesus knew in this moment that the Father had put all things, how many things? All things under his power. And he knew that he'd come from God and he was returning to God. He's completely confident in who he is, where he has been and where he is going. He knows his identity and he has all authority. It's fascinating. He knows that God has empowered him in the most extreme way possible. So how does the most powerful person, the most powerful man in the room, what does he do when he realizes that God has given him power? The first thing that he does when he realizes that he's the most powerful person in the room is he got up from the meal, he took off his outer clothing, he recognizes immediately that even his outer clothing is a symbol of his power, and what does he do? He wraps a towel around his waist. You read about this and it's almost mind-boggling compared to how power in our world operates. It's mind-boggling because Jesus continually gave his power away. He never leveraged his power to protect his power. He leveraged his power to protect the powerless. And powerful people hated that. They were very threatened by it. Because they looked at Jesus and says, he's got to have some hidden agenda. Nobody just has that much power and just gives it away. He's got so much power. He's got so much physical influence. He's got so much influence on the crowds right now. He's got so much moral authority. He speaks like no one has ever spoken before. Surely at some point he is going to do what everyone else has done in the history of the world when they have power. He's going to leverage his power like every other political leader and every other religious leader. He's going to leverage it for himself. But he doesn't pick up the scepter. He picks up the towel and uses his power to serve other people. You've seen the picture now, aren't you? Because just the next day later, what's going to happen? On Friday, he's going to pick up his cross and willingly lay down his life on a cross and give all of his power away. Power's right down. Laid down his power, not for his sake, but for yours and mine. Nobody does that with power. Well, let me ask you this. Everybody here in this room has power of some kind. You're like, well, I'd like a little more. I know you would. Yeah, I don't have much power in this. I know you wouldn't. But everybody in this room has power of some kind, at least for a few moments anyways. God gives you that. For some of us, we have financial power. We have financial resources, and money can make things happen, right? It's a power. And compared to most places in this world, we are all powerful because of how much money we have. Some of us, some of you, are powerful because you're an expert in some area of knowledge. I'm amazed sometimes at Bow Valley Christian Church just how many experts in how many fields we have in this room. There's a lot of information and knowledge and experience. And some of you have that. And that knowledge is a power. Some of you have it organizationally. Maybe you have a place in your organization where you have some power. Maybe you're a teacher. Maybe you're a leader. Maybe you're a vice president. Maybe you're in charge of, you have organizational power. Some of you have personal power. That is, you look really good and you have an amazing personality. And just by the charisma of your personality and just by the way that you walk in this world, you have influence and you have power. God gave it to you. What's another power? Some of us have, well, actually all of us these days have media power, don't we? Every teenager, every 9-year-old in this room has the power to ruin another teenager's life through their phone. Isn't that true? Lots of us have informational power. Lots of us have power to reward others. Lots of us have power to influence others, power to bless others. But here's the thing, power, and you've got some, power always gets leveraged for good or bad. Some of us went to the movie The Sound of Freedom this last week. There's a story of power being leveraged for bad mostly, but also leveraged for good in some cases. And I would venture to say this, that in a room like this, the darkest moments of your life, many of us anyways, the worst parts of our story, the most painful parts, are when somebody else abused the power that they had and leveraged it against us. It might have been your parents. Might have been your teacher or your step-parents or your coach. Somebody leveraged power against you in a negative way. We see it constantly in politics, constantly in business. And to some degree, we've all been a victim of people who have abused their power. But on the other hand, I'd also venture to say this, that some of the best things that ever happened in your life, I am guessing, that have been extremely positive, is when somebody has leveraged their power for you, when they've given you a second chance. Wow. When they give you a fresh start or a new opportunity, or somebody leveraged their power and opened themselves up so that you could come back into their life. I'm guessing that some of the best times is when somebody who had power over you leveraged it for your benefit. I wouldn't be here today if people older than me had not leveraged, given away their power so that I could have opportunities that I wouldn't have had otherwise. I don't think that I would be following Jesus the way I am today if people haven't leveraged the power of their words to build me up and gave away their power for me. Power will always be leveraged for good or for bad. In other words, you can put it this way. All power is stewardship. We're all responsible and accountable for what we do with what we have. And so the scepter says, get more power, get more influence, climb up the ladder as fast as you can. Get more power so that you can protect yourself, for goodness sakes. So that you can be safe, so that you can be convenient. Natal, leverage your power for other people. So let me ask you, how can you give your power away? How could you leverage your power for the sake of others? This is the way of the towel. Why has God given you the influence that you have with your grandchildren or your children or the people sitting in your pew? Why has He given you that influence? Why has He given you those resources? He's given you those to steward them. Which means this, that the greatest person in the room at any given time is the one that serves and uses their power for the sake of others, according to Jesus. We've done that sometimes in our house. I need to do it more often in our house. And so you kids, I want you to listen up because you might want to try this in your house. Look at the person who's serving the most. Maybe they're cleaning up. Maybe they're picking up dishes. Maybe they're getting things for other people to serve them in some way. At that moment, what you need to do, and this is what we would do with our children oftentimes, we would go up to them, and as they're putting the dishes away without being told, or as they're being kind to somebody without anybody else knowing, we'll say to them, "You're the greatest person in the room right now." It's true. Whoever is serving, leveraging their power for the sake of others, that's who Jesus says is great. That's greatness. And so you kids, if you see your siblings or you see your parents and they're just serving, just say to them, "You're the greatest in the room right now." Right? They'll think you're acting weird and trying to get something from you, but all you're doing is quoting the sermon. That's what greatness is. Greatness, according to Jesus, is when we kneel and we serve others with the influence, with the resources, with the experience that we've been given. Well, and lastly, let me just give you one more. Love kneels, power kneels, but Jesus also says this. At the end of it, he says, happiness also kneels. He says, "Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor messenger than the one who sent him. And now that you know these things, you will be blessed. You will be walking the blessed path of God if you do them." You could put it this way, that even happiness is the result of kneeling. So the scepter says, if you want to be happy, you need to acquire and get your circumstances correct. You need to own more. You need to have more influence. You need to be able to compare yourself to others and rise above them. That's what the scepter says. But here's the thing. You can't get to happiness that way. It doesn't go there. Happiness isn't the result of that. It's very temporary. That happiness, according to Jesus, is actually a byproduct of Tao living. Studies have proven this. You serve people and you will feel better. In the UK, they did a study over a period of 20 years. And this was about 5 or 6 years ago, they did this study. They did 40 different studies. And they asked this question, is there a connection between happiness and health and selflessness? So what they discovered is basically this. If you have a habit of volunteering, what they discovered is that you will have less depression, less heart disease, less stress, and get this, teenagers who volunteered had less drug addiction, they had less unplanned pregnancies, that even forcing a teenager to serve, even if they have a bad attitude, still has a positive result. That's what some of you parents are going to take away from this message. That there was, you would have a greater psychological well-being, you would have higher self-esteem, you would live longer, you have better quality of life, that clinical research shows that volunteering and mentoring pumps up your immune system, that selfless activity actually increases your ability to fight diseases. And yet our culture is saying just the opposite. Acquire to be happy, consume to be happy, look your best to feel your best. But research all over the world has come to this conclusion that one of the best things you can do for yourself is to not focus on yourself. Selflessness leads to happiness. This is what Jesus revealed when he kneels, that you can thrive when you serve, that actually you don't have enough inside of yourself to make yourself happy, that you actually are happier and healthier when you give away yourself to serve and love and forgive other people. And so if you want to be happy, you have to figure out a way to give yourself away. You're divinely designed to serve. Interesting, isn't it? I don't know about you, but I've gone through phases of my life where I do like personality studies. Have you ever done that? And you analyze yourself. What kind of leader am I? What kind of person am I? What kind of man am I? What's my personality type? You know, just basically looking at myself and myself and myself. Almost every time I've got really discouraged. When I start looking at myself and analyzing myself, it's very, very, it's depressing. It really is. And so, and it's kind of a cycle, isn't it? Because you look at yourself and you realize you're a mess, and it's like, oh, I'm depressed that I'm a mess. So I keep looking at myself. What can I do to get better? And I realize there's more mess in there. Right? Do you see? Pick up a towel. Pick up a towel. Get out of yourself to serve others. Jesus says, if you do this, you will be blessed. Well, it doesn't mean your life will be easy and all roses. It means you'll be on the road of blessing where God wants you to be. So let's wrap this up. Love, power, happiness all kneel. And this is what Jesus says at the end. He says, and since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to go and wash each other's feet. So let me ask a couple questions to close this off. One is, can you see Jesus washing your feet? Can you see him loving you? It's amazing when you, friends, you could come to church for years and never experience this, but I so want you to experience seeing and feeling Jesus loving you. Not just hearing somebody say, God loves you, but loving you. Look into his eyes as he serves you. Too many times I think we miss God because we're looking at things that we want them to be big. We want them to be supernatural. We want them to be magnificent. We want them to be bigger than life. But not so with God. He's self-emptying and he's kneeling. And so sometimes we actually need to look down at our feet, the smallness of our wrecked toenails, and see him with the towel. And if you do that, friends, if you get a glimpse of Jesus washing your feet and loving you like that, I'll tell you what will happen. It will knock you off the center of your life, and he will be moved into the center. But only if you see him doing that for you. Do you see him? Do you want to change? The scepter can bring fear, and it can change you for a little while. But the towel, if you see him washing your feet, man, that's a different experience. Can you see him washing your feet? Second question, will you wash someone else's? Now, listen, this is the part of this story that kind of ticks me off a little bit. Because what I would like for Jesus to say is, Steve, I've washed your feet. I love you. Even the worst parts of you. Yes. And what I'd like Jesus to say is, now wash my feet. And I would. I'll sing you a song, Jesus. I'll sing you a song. I'll praise you in the sanctuary. I'll lift up my hands. I'll pray to you. I'll read the Bible. Yes, I can love you, Jesus. You loved me so much. I would like to love you. Oh, I love you, Jesus. That's not what it says. What it says is, we love Jesus by loving other people. That I owe Jesus Christ for what he has done to me, but now my neighbors are the appointed agents authorized to receive what I owe Jesus. Who do I give my power away to? Who do I love when I don't feel it? Who do I lay down my life for? I lay down my life for my neighbor. I lay down my life, let me put it this way. Married people, your spouse is the one who is authorized to receive what you owe Jesus. You wash your spouse's feet and you are washing Jesus' feet. Wow. I wash Jesus' feet as I wash her feet. Now, sometimes I think, just a little tangent here, when it comes to marriage, I think sometimes we ask the wrong question. It's not the question of who's going to make me happy for the rest of my life. The real question is, who are you willing to serve for the rest of your life? Your children, parents, are the appointed agents authorized to receive what you owe the King. You wash Jesus' feet as you wash their feet. Should I keep going? Members of the church, the people in your pew down the row, the people in your life, your neighbors, the one that bugs you, the one that you don't like, the one that isn't like you, the one that's just so frustrating, the one that's even your enemy, Jesus says. They are the appointed agents. They are the ones that you are to wash their feet. And as you do that, you are loving Jesus himself. I wash Jesus' feet as I wash theirs. So will you wash somebody's feet? Well, I got this towel. I've been waving it around for a while now. And the reason is that I want you to think of the way of the towel whenever you see a towel. That's what I want you to do. You see one in the bathroom? It's the way of the towel. You see it on the towel rack, dish towel, by the sink? It's the way of the towel. You see a hand towel? You see a towel in the section in Walmart? You see your golf towel? You see a towel at the gym? You see this towel? You got towels all over your life. And they're all reminding you of the way of the towel. And the reason that Jesus Christ, his life reverberates through history, and we're here today, and that the reason that every culture and every civilization continues to be enamored by Jesus is not because he came into this world to be served. It's because he chose to serve and give his life away. And so a towel paints a portrait of his way of life. A towel reveals greatness. And a towel distinguishes those who have allowed him to serve them. And so maybe you're here today and you say, Steve, I got some people who I need to wash their feet, but I do not want to do that. I can't do that. What do I do when I can't seem to love people and I don't want to give my power away to somebody else? What do I do then? What do I do when I'm unable to kneel in love? When I'm unable to give away my power? When I'm unable to be happy? What that means, friends, if that's you this morning, it means it's time for you to let the King wash your feet again. It's once again time for you to see Jesus love you with self-emptying love. Lift up your heads, ye ancient doors, that the King of glory might come in. And who is this King of glory? He's the Lord Almighty, wrapped in a towel. He's the King of glory.